The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Whatever stage your business is at, there's always time to imagine sustainable, positive change. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now, to the story of a rinky-dink, as our next guest puts it, video game hardware manufacturer that has become the most valuable company in the world. NVIDIA is the first company to reach a $5 trillion valuation. It's fallen back nearly 10% this week on an AI stock sell-off, but its founder, Jensen Huang, his shares are still worth $160 billion. Before he discovered that AI was the perfect match for his video game hardware, he faced the wrath of investors, and the company was not taken very seriously on Wall Street. It had spent years losing money. Now NVIDIA has companies and countries fighting to get access to its products. We're joined by LA-based investigative journalist Stephen Witt. He's author of The Thinking Machine, Jensen Huang, NVIDIA, and the World's Most Coveted Microchip. Stephen, you're very welcome. Before the link with AI, did you take NVIDIA seriously as a business or as a stock?
Nobody did. In fact, its stock price was choppy. It floated around for over a decade. It was stagnant. It was viewed as a real laggard on Wall Street, and not just for a little while, for quite a long time. People thought Jensen was eccentric, you know, and Jensen founded this company. He's founded it and run it ever since, all 32 years of its existence. He's been the only one in charge. You know, he had kind of a reputation as a difficult guy with kind of unusual ideas about where computing was going to go. And there was a lot of skepticism about him for quite a long time.
But he's a real technical person, isn't he? More so than the sort of business executive type guy, because at some point he decided that he could maximize the processing power and so forth of what he was building, but he wasn't even sure what use it might have until AI came along.
Yeah, that's precisely right. He actually called this the $0 billion market. He was going to build this giant computing platform and then just wait for customers to show up. And people thought this was crazy, you know, because it's like, who is this for? Mainstream scientists have access to a powerful supercomputer already. So if you're selling a low budget supercomputer, it's kind of for like marginalized scientists. Basically, it was for mad scientists, right? And in 2012, a group of basically mad scientists in Toronto took this GPU, this graphics processing unit, and ported a neural network, a very kind of exotic kind of AI, onto it, and found that almost immediately they started producing world-class results. And that was the point at which AI intersected, and that was the point at which NVIDIA was transformed.
Jensen Huang himself, he's had an interesting story behind him. He was born, was it in Taiwan, and then the family moved to Kentucky when he was young?
Yeah, well, Jensen was born in Taiwan, moved to Thailand when he was 5, and then he was actually sent ahead of his family to the United States. It's kind of what they call a parachute kid. He stayed with his uncle for a while, and his uncle decided that Jensen should go to like a prestigious boarding school, like college prep school. And he sent him to this school in Kentucky, the Oneida Baptist Institute. Well, it turns out that school is actually a reform academy for juvenile delinquents, for like bad kids. And so Jensen shows up. He shows up at this boarding school. The place is covered in cigarette butts, and like half the kids have like switchblades. And he arrives to meet his roommate, and his roommate lifts up his shirt and shows him the place where he was stabbed in like a recent knife fight. So Jensen is living with this kid. But the kid actually, who is, you know, a knife fighter, takes him under his wing, and they get kind of like close. And Jensen eventually finds this experience to be wonderful.
That's a tough situation to be in as a kid, isn't it?
He thrived in this situation, right? Thousands of miles from home, basically the only Chinese kid, him and his brother, the only Asian kids around, a lot of racism, a tough environment. And yet somehow we find a way not just to survive there, but actually to thrive there.
You've met him. You've interviewed him. What was he like?
Yes. Intense. One of his executives compared interacting with Jensen to sticking your finger into the light socket. And I can tell you it is exactly like that. He's just so tightly wound. He doesn't want to waste any time at all. Truly, he's a brilliant guy. I mean, he might be the most capable person I've ever met. And I've met a lot of CEOs, and you know, some of them are brilliant and some of them are not so brilliant. Jensen is at the top. I mean, and the other thing that makes him so special, most CEOs are very guarded. You know, they have media training, they have a lawyer around, they have a PR executive. They're not going to tell you anything. Jensen was very candid. He was very open, and I must say I really appreciated this about him. Even 10 minutes with Jensen, he would reveal so much about himself, his company, and his way of thinking. And this is another thing that really, I think, makes Jensen a great leader is his candor.
Is that born out of a confidence as well?
You know, it's funny. Jensen does not he presents as extremely confident, but describes himself as not confident. He describes himself almost as actually very neurotic, driven in great part by negative emotions. You know, he's paranoid. He's scared that other companies are going to come and conquer him. He's driven to a great degree by guilt, he said, or shame, fear of letting people down, fear of letting his employees down. And so it's actually these negative emotions that spur Jensen to such great heights. I've met people who are neurotic, but I've never seen anybody harness it in quite this way. You know, most CEOs really present as this kind of tough, alpha male, confident type. And Jensen is that. But inside, it comes from a totally different place.
He can be pretty direct and blunt with staff, can't he? I mean, he'll even do a bit of roaring and shouting at them from time to time.
Yeah, I think if was it Sir Alex Ferguson who had the hairdryer?
Yes.
Jensen has that too. You know, he will let loose on employees and scream at them. You know, and he'll do it for hours in front of, you know, a group of people. Now, Jensen's MO is always to yell at people actually with an audience because he wants everybody to see what's happening. He wants everybody to so what he says, learn from failure, learn from other people's mistakes. I think there's two things to understand about Jensen. As mean as he can be to staff, he actually never fires anyone. So unlike Elon Musk, who's going to lay off an entire engineering division, he's actually going to not fire you. If you offer, even for underperformance, you might get demoted. You know, you might get put on some kind of performance plan, but he almost never fires anyone. The second thing is that he's pretty generous as an employer. You know, NVIDIA is pretty generous with stock options, and it's pretty generous with compensation, especially now. And so those people who've stuck with him are just extraordinarily wealthy. But even before that, I think it was like his vision of what computers could be and his charisma in explaining what that was drew people to him. Bill Dolly, the former chair of the computer science department at Stanford, joined NVIDIA way back in the doldrums in 2009 when this company was falling apart. And, you know, Dolly, Stanford, he can go anywhere. And I was like, why did you join NVIDIA? And he was just like, you know, you want to follow Jensen. You want to follow Jensen wherever he's going to go.
He is, you mentioned about him being very concerned about competitors and somebody else coming along. There are weaknesses in all of this. I mean, the company is hugely profitable, hugely successful, but it's also massively valued at that close to $5 trillion. They make the product in Taiwan, which is seen as good for now, but potentially problematic down the road.
Yeah, I mean, what if China invades Taiwan? It's a possibility. And, you know, every American microchip firm is vulnerable to this. Actually, our whole global economy is vulnerable to this problem. So I'm not sure if Jensen is unique in that way. There's also the problem, as you bring up, of competition, right? So Google now has its TPU, which is kind of the competitor to NVIDIA's GPU. And there's a number of Chinese firms looking to build the same thing. So, you know, the classic book on microchips was from Intel, Andy Grove. It said, only the paranoid survive. And that's really Jensen's industry, and it's the mindset he has to have.
How has he navigated his relationship with Donald Trump and the Trump administration's desire to have more security around production and more microchips made in the US?
You know, well, I mean, he's got Trump on his side. Jensen does not talk about his relationship with Trump. So to some extent, I can only speculate. But here's my guess. Trump likes to be near Jensen because he's a winner, right? He's the biggest winner in modern business. He's the number one guy. And so that's going to attract Trump to Jensen. Jensen, in turn, he's going to approach Trump, believe it or not, he's going to approach it like an engineering problem. He's going to test different inputs with Trump. He's going to test saying different kinds of things to Trump. And then he's going to see if it gets him closer or further away from what he wants.
Good luck with that.
I think it's working. I think he's found the sauce because, you know, Trump actually has lifted these export restrictions, which the Biden administration refused to do and which the U.S. national security kind of apparatus does not like at all.
One of the things, I mean, AI and the way in which it has taken off so quickly and all of the potential about where it might go is driving a lot of investment. Many people believe there's a bubble in relation to these valuations, but also they warn about the dangers of AI vis-a-vis security, humans and our role in society in the future and our power and control, as well as our interactions. Do you think these are things that Jensen Huang, you know, thinks about at all? Does it keep him awake at night?
I am sure that he has considered whether or not this is a bubble. I think he thinks it is not. You know, demand for his product is just in, you know, it's years long backlog. People want to buy these microchips, and they have a lot of money to do so. What about the other scenario where AI is not a bubble, right? Well, then what if it gets too good? That's almost scarier than if it is a bubble. And I asked Jensen a lot about this, and he just doesn't see it. He thinks AI is a purely positive force for human society. He thinks it's going to usher in a new age of prosperity. He thinks it's going to cure diseases. He thinks it's almost like opposing AI would be like opposing agriculture or the Industrial Revolution, that your life is going to be improved and transformed in such a positive way that you'll think it was silly you ever had any concerns about AI.
What do you say? Do you have concerns?
Yeah, I definitely have concerns. I mean, I just don't understand in a world where we have, you know, kind of like high-performance robots that can do a lot of our physical labor and hyper-intelligent machines that can do a lot of our kind of intellectual labor, like what's left? What do we do then? I mean, I'm not really sure what the role of the human in that world is. And I must say, I brought this up with Jensen in a variety of ways, a variety of times. And as I continued to bring it up, I could sense he was getting more and more frustrated, that he felt that he had answered this question to his satisfaction already and there was nothing left to ask. But in one of our last interviews, I just felt like I had to ask it one more time. And so I actually showed him a clip of the science fiction author Arthur C. Clarke talking about the future of intelligent machines. And to my great surprise, Jensen just exploded at me. And I got to experience the hairdryer up close first.
What did he say?
Just for about 20 minutes. He was like, these questions are pedestrian. He basically called my line of questioning stupid. He said he'd already answered these questions. He expected more from me. He was disappointed in me that I kept asking these kind of questions. And this went on for a long time. It was 10, 20 minutes.
Is he interested in anything outside of microchips and AI?
No. I mean, he has hobbies, collects whiskey. He's got a couple supercars. You know, he liked to cook. But from what I've heard from his friends, is once AI came around, he basically dropped almost everything. In 2013 and 2014, as AI kind of did shape up as this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, as he called it, he just dedicated himself full-time exclusively to building these systems. Now, he goes on vacation from time to time, and as you say, he has this vast fortune. He's done some charitable giving, but I think for Jensen, his money can play no more important role than simply being NVIDIA's largest individual shareholder.
Well, he's a fascinating guy, and it's a fascinating book. Stephen Witt, investigative journalist and author of The Thinking Machine, Jensen Huang, NVIDIA, and the World's Most Coveted Microchip. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Oh, thank you so much. It was my pleasure.